No doubt those of you who are old enough, which is, doesn't have to be terribly old, will remember that on September the 11th, 2001, two hijacked passenger planes were intentionally crashed into the 110-storey Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York City, resulting in the collapse of both buildings soon afterwards. Not one stone was left upon another. All was thrown down. The unthinkable had happened. And those of us who are old enough remember exactly where we were when we first heard about it. Even though we were on the other side of the world, for most of us, the pictures and news footage of that day will replay in our mind's eye for the rest of our lives. There have been other disasters before and since with much larger loss of life. Typhoon Haiyan caused much more widespread damage in the Philippines this past week, and the death toll may be larger. But for most of us, no subsequent disaster has affected us quite as dramatically, because the World Trade Center attack changed the way people felt about their world. Not just because of the disastrous war that followed it, but because the destruction of the Twin Towers symbolised something much bigger than even 110-storey buildings. Somehow they symbolised our society's capacity to achieve whatever it wanted to achieve. They stood as some sort of symbolic assurance of the global supremacy of Western capitalist democracy. And our previously unshakable confidence in the military supremacy of Western capitalist democracies meant that we could always defend ourselves against attacks. That certainty was kind of blown to smithereens when the towers were brought down by 10 men armed with pocket knives. Dark and fearful times. Our world somehow seemed a lot less certain and secure since then. But we're not the first people in history to experience such an earth-shattering and worldview-destroying attack. The destruction of the temple in Jerusalem in the year 70 had a quite similar impact on the people of that day. Jesus was one of a number of people who had predicted it. But by the time that Luke wrote the account of Jesus' words that we heard, it had already happened. And so the account gives us some sense of the way people were reacting to what had happened. The temple had dominated the Jerusalem skyline just as surely as the Twin Towers did in New York City. And Luke describes what must have been a very common scene. People walking around the temple, marvelling at its scale, its grandeur and its spectacular adornment. For the people of Jerusalem, the temple was a source of enormous pride. It was central to their whole sense of identity. We are the people who live in God's own city, who live within sight of the temple, the house of God. We are proud and confident. Surely nothing can destroy us because God would let no harm come to his city and its inhabitants. But as the sightseers bask in the glory of the temple, Jesus says, "These things that you see, the days will come when not one stone will be left on another and all will be thrown down." Unthinkable, unimaginable, and yet less than 40 years later, that previously unshakable confidence in the global supremacy of Jerusalem and its God was blown to smithereens when the temple was brought down and the city sacked by the Roman army. Dark and fearful times. Their world seemed a lot less certain and secure after that. The towers and temples in which we put our trust and which symbolise our identity and security are not always built of stone and concrete and steel. They do not always belong to the whole society or culture the way that the Twin Towers did or the Jerusalem Temple did. Most people have their own personal towers and temples too. For some, it will be your job or a particular position on the career ladder that you're heading for. You've worked hard to get there. It means the world to you. If asked about yourself, the first thing you talk about and the main thing you talk about is your work. You're proud of what you do and where you've got to. It defines you and gives you a sense of purpose and place in the world. And because it seems rock solid, you know that your world is okay and nothing much could go wrong. But the dreadful day comes when not one stone is left on another and all is thrown down. Maybe the company collapses unexpectedly and everyone is out of work. Or you get sick or injured and are unable to return to work. Your whole world collapses. Not one stone is left on another. All is thrown down. For others, it will be some hope for your future. Perhaps a dream of being married and having children of your own. There are plenty of other things in your life, but the thing that really matters to you, the thing that really defines who you are and how you see yourself, is the confidence that before too much longer, you'll be a parent and a good one. And since you were little, you've anticipated that day when you'll hold a child of your own and maybe then another one. That would be the pinnacle, the thing that would make your life complete. As long as that day is coming, all is well with the world. But for some, a dreadful day comes when not one stone is left on another and all is thrown down. For some, they marry and find themselves unable to conceive. Or maybe you just wake up one day and realise that you're 44 and still single, and even if you marry one day, the whole kids of your own thing seems to be out the window. Not one stone left on another. All is thrown down. For others, maybe it's your health and fitness, or perhaps your good looks, that stand as kind of an assurance that all is well with your world and your future is bright. And then a dreadful day comes when the doctor says, cancer. Or you're disfigured in a car accident. Or you just look in the mirror one day and see someone a whole lot older and tireder looking back at you than you expected to see. And you know that another round of plastic surgery or doubling your gym regime is just not going to make you look and feel 29 again. And not one stone is left on another. For others, it will be a perfect marriage that comes crashing down through death or infidelity, or perhaps just through realising that although it works and it will last, it's probably never going to live up to the dream marriage you always had in your head. Somehow your world crashes down, not one stone left on another. For some, it's political success. I think Kevin Rudd is probably feeling at the moment that not one stone is left on another and all has come crashing down. As for these things that you see, these magnificent symbols of our success and accomplishment and security, the days will come when not one stone will be left on another and all will be thrown down, says Jesus. And they asked him, "Teacher, when will this be? And what will the sign be that this is all about to take place?" And he said, "Beware that you do not get led astray, for many will come in my name saying, 'I'm he.' The time is near. Don't go after them." Jesus had not said there would be a sign, but those who hear him assume that there must be a sign, a warning. But Jesus doesn't offer them a sign. In fact, he warns them that a preoccupation with warning signs would lead them astray. Many will come claiming that they can read and interpret the signs. Don't go after them. Jesus does not call us to be prophets. He calls us to avoid falling for the false prophets. The gospel of Jesus Christ is not about being able to predict the course of the future or read supernatural signs. Nor is the gospel about securing our world so that the towers and temples will not fall. Rather, the gospel offers to empower us and resource us so that when the towers and temples do fall, even the ones that we've erected for ourselves, that we can endure and survive and find a way out of the rubble and on towards new life and new hope. You can react to these kind of predictions by getting caught up in the speculation and prophesying games. Or you can react the way Jesus calls us to react, by living out the gospel even more boldly and courageously in the midst of the calamities that engulf our world. Jesus is quite clear that if we follow him, far from staying out of harm's way, we will in fact attract hostility and suspicion. If we stand aside from the great symbols that our society erects and refuse to bow down and worship the great towers or the great career paths or the great dream families or the celebrity perfect bodies and instead set about loving the victims who stumble from the smoking rubble looking for a place of refuge and asylum, we will be accused of being on the side of those who bring down towers. Those who undermine marriage and the family. Those who ruin economies. But Jesus did not call us to look at something like what happened in the Philippines last week and try and piece it into a prophetic puzzle. He called us to stand alongside the victims and give generously. In the midst of the hostility and attacks, says Jesus, you will have the opportunity to testify, to bear witness to a life and a hope that is not bound up in towers and temples of our own making. Paradoxically, he says, you will be betrayed and hated, and they will put some of you to death, but not a hair of your head will perish. Interesting juxtaposition. They'll put you to death, but not a hair of your head will perish. You may be killed, but not harmed. By your endurance, you will gain your souls. And he should know, for he has endured all that too. He has been put to death and made even death a pathway to real life. And now, as he warns us that we may face the same, he promises to be there with us when the towers fall and the hostilities break out. The one who knows what it is like will be there to see us through. Towers and temples will fall. They have before, they will again. There's probably not one among us who will not know again the experience of our own tower falling, our own world falling apart, not one stone left on another and all thrown down. The good news is not a protection against that happening. The good news is that towers and temples were not all they were cracked up to be in the first place, and that their falling is the invitation to find the life and hope that will endure even when all is thrown down. For as many of us can attest, it has often been when the towers fall that we see most clearly that only God's unshakable love and towering compassion remain. Though our world comes crashing down, we actually find ourselves falling into the loving hands of God. And if we can resist the temptation to quickly erect another tower, we can rest in those hands and find the life that really is life. Most of us have to learn that lesson several times. Most of us get caught up in the stampede to get another tower up and give us something to believe in again. But as my daughter Acacia, who was 7 years old at the time, asked when we visited the site of the Twin Towers collapse and we looked at the artist's impression of the new tower that was going to go up in their place, she said, "What's to stop someone bringing the new one down just the same?" Nothing. Towers and temples will fall. Not one stone will be left on another. But do not despair. Do not be terrified, for whether they stand or whether they fall, they were little more than idols and distractions and false promises anyway, symbols of our delusion more than of our accomplishment. When nothing else stands, God's unshakable love and towering compassion remain. So turn to them now and live. Turn to them now and know yourself beloved. Turn to them now and by your endurance, gain your souls.